This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone. The 45-year drought is over. The Los Angeles Kings are indeed the Kings of the National Hockey League. They are the 2012 Stanley Cup champions.
Cleared away by the Kings, picked up by Martinez. Martinez to Clifford, feeds it right side to Foley with a shot. Save, rebound, score! Alec Martinez has won the Stanley Cup for the Los Angeles Kings, and royalty reigns again in the NHL.
Hey, what's up, Kings fans, and welcome to the Hockey Royalty Podcast, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. We have got a fantastic show lined up for you tonight, but before we get going, I want to let you know that you can find us on social media. We can be found on Twitter at Hockey_Royalty and also at Royalty_Pod, and we can be found on Facebook at Hockey Royalty. So this, like I said, this is just something I've been looking forward to for a very long time here, and I can't wait to get started. But before we bring our guests in, I'm going to bring our esteemed panel. First of all, I'm going to bring in the Shakespeare of hockey royalty. This guy is the end-all, be-all of the editing world. It is Mr. Ryan Sykes. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, Scott. How are we doing tonight? Been looking forward to this one for a while.
Oh, absolutely. This is going to be a lot of fun. And up next, my other normal shotgun rider here, if you will. He is the prince of PDO. He is the count of Corsi. He is the master of everything in the analytics world. It's Mr. Russell Morgan. What's up, Russ?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Yeah, like Ryan said, I'm excited for this one. Should be fun.
Oh, this is going to be a great one, I'll tell you. And also joining us, we haven't heard from him in a while, but we're glad to have him back. Joining us from the Great White North, it's Mr. Ryan Cowley. What's happening, Ryan?
Great to be here. So thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So without further ado, I want to bring in our guest. Our guest is a legend in the world of the Los Angeles Kings.
Guys, great to be with you. It's always great to talk hockey. It's always great to talk Kings hockey. So thanks very much for having me.
Hey, Jim, just want to dive into kind of your playing career. I know that you kind of had to retire at kind of an early age. Just kind of walk us through, you know, your age 29 season. I know the knee injuries kind of plagued you there at the end. Just when did you kind of realize that, you know, you might not be able to play as long as you wanted?
Well, it's interesting because I played 8 full seasons, and then at the end of my 8th season, I still remember it like it was yesterday. I fell into the boards in Boston and I didn't really notice anything. I was on the bench getting up to move over, as you're shifting yourself on the bench, and I just felt something pop in my right knee, and just, you know, nothing big deal. We got beat pretty bad that night and we flew back the next day, and, you know, we had what you call a punishment skate, a bag skate, where they're, you know, the coaches are going to make sure that you're not going to have the same bad game again. And basically it was just all skating, and about 15 minutes in, which was going to be an hour long skate, I Bernie Nichols was kind of skating around me, and I said, Bernie, I said, I cannot go. I just can't skate any. I cannot do it. And he's going, you're just trying to get up, you know. And I went up and down and did some lines back and forth a couple more times, and I just can't, and, you know, Bernie, I can't. So I went to the coach. I said, Coach, I got to go. I can't. And 4 knee surgeries later, I came back. You know, I missed the first year Gretz was with us. Came back the beginning of the next year, and I remember I was in Winnipeg, I believe, in a corner. I had the puck in the corner, and I had Sean Cronin coming at me, a defenseman, who was a bigger guy, a tougher guy, mm-hmm. not necessarily known for his skating. And anytime you have a D-man coming right at you, that's the best thing, because you can go either way. You've got him locked. He's in the tracks. You're going to whack him. And I made a move. Bang, he hit me. And I went, you know what? I just don't have the quickness anymore. I just do not have that. And that was my game. First step quickness was my game. I didn't have it. And I played another two or three games. That's it. And I just never got it. So it was, I honestly felt when I retired that I was just starting to get it, so to speak, as far as, you know, understanding all of the aspects of what you should bring as a player. It took me that long to get there, but you know, that was it. It was, you know, I consider my playing career a disappointment. You know, I was a 10th overall pick, mm-hmm. Pretty good numbers in junior, better numbers than anyone else. Had decent numbers, you know, 30 goal seasons, NHL, good. But unfortunately for me, I just consider it a disappointment as far as the playing.
Yeah, well, I didn't realize it was 4 knee surgeries. That's tough to not only deal with, but come back from each one of them. Just from your time, I know obviously you spent your entire career in Los Angeles. Over that time, who were kind of some of your favorite teammates and players, or even the coaching staff that you really took a liking to?
Pat Quinn as a coach was, you know, because I was a smaller guy. I was a skilled guy. And Pat as a player, you know, was a big, lumbering, tough defenseman. And as a, you know, just his presence. But he would always talk to me and put me in situations where I could use my skill. He said, you're a big part of this team. Like, so he didn't downplay he didn't hold it against me that I wasn't a physical player. I mean, he wanted me to play my strengths, which you should be doing, you know, you shouldn't have to worry about that stuff. When I first came, my first year, I was 170 pounds and I got killed. So the next year I came in at 185 and you know, I played Bernie mostly, and you know what? He's not going to the corner. So I have to. And, you know, just to kind of hold your own against bigger guys. And if I were to do it again under today's rules, I would be 170 pounds and skate around. They couldn't touch you. You know, they can't catch you. But I think Pat was really good that way as far as, you know, hanging it. One of the most underrated coaches, and I only had him for 1 year, was my first year, was Bob Berry. 1980-81, we had the best road record in the NHL. And believe me, guys, if you ever hear nowadays someone complain about travel, slap them right across the head. I mean, you know, Leroy Jethro Gibbs, boom, right in the back of the head. Because we played 21-team league, home and home, 2-2 against every team in the league. Commercial, not charter, and we had the best road record in the NHL that year. That Bob Berry, I think, is one of the most underrated coaches. He wasn't technical. He just had a good combination of technique and, you know, that motivational factor that you need from any coach. And then certainly, you know, Roger Nielsen, he was there for a while, just a, you know, student of the game. I cannot imagine Roger nowadays, you know, breaking down the game and, you know, the analytics, and he would just be phenomenal that way. As far as players, you know, just, you know, Dave Taylor is such a role model to any athlete. Dave gave everything every night, and that's, you just had to be in the locker room after a game with him to see that. That was so inspirational. You know, Marcel was incredibly talented. Gretz, of course, comes a little bit later, but I played against Wayne mostly, you know, mm-hmm. So I remember him mostly as an Oiler as opposed to a King. I remember Luke when he came up because of just the outstanding skill and understanding of how to put the puck in the net, you know, that all they can do is score. Oh, isn't that what the game's all about, is scoring? You know, Phil Sykes was a real close friend of mine.
Maybe we're related.
What's that?
My last name is Sykes. Maybe we're related.
Exactly. There you go. Well, if your nickname's Psycho, then you're related. Dean Kennedy, Mark Hardy, You know, Jay Wells from my first year. I guess I probably remember the guys mostly when I was breaking in. So as you can tell, it's just throughout the years, some great Bernie Nichols. I played with most of my career, and an incredibly talented player. So fortunate to be with one team. You know, as I sit here now, still with the Kings, this many years later, I just feel fortunate to hang around with one team.
And you kind of touched on it with Wayne Gretzky, but you're you're an integral part of the miracle in Manchester. You guys are down 5-0 at the end of the second period. Just kind of walk me through what the mood was like in the locker room going into the third, and maybe when you guys felt that you guys could really actually win the game.
I'm asked that question a lot about in between. I really don't remember a lot other than the cliches, which are, let's win a period. You know, let's win a period and look forward to the next game, win a period. I do remember skating around the form, our half of the ice as the third period starting, and Edmonton, and they were kind of laughing it up and joking it up, and it's just things that catch your mind. Hey, they went on to win, what, 4 of the next 6 or 5 of the next 7? I mean, you know, we were probably part of their learning experience of what it takes to win. But, you know, I just remember a few of their guys, they're just kind of, Dave Lumley, kind of skating around, cocky and smiling. And that's all. I mean, as the period went along, believe me, I think you take it one shift at a time anyway, so you don't get too far ahead of yourself. And, you know, I think when it got to 5-3, that's when, of course, it got a little bit more interesting. That's what happened. But, you know, to say, you know, this happened, that happened, you know, it's tough to put all everything together now looking back on it. But I do remember the Oilers being a little bit cocky, and rightly so. They were by far the most talented team, but they still had some lessons to learn.
You know, Foxy, I think they kind of took their cue from Glenn Sather. He was quite confident in his team himself. No doubt a great coach, though. So when you got done with your playing career, you transitioned into broadcasting, and I have to tell you, you are an absolute natural. I mean, it's like you were born to do this, and you, of course, got to work with one of the most legendary all-time play-by-play men of all, you know, being Bob Miller. How was that working with him?
Well, it was very, to take you back, I hope I'm comfortable now. I feel like I can go and do a game, you know, like second nature now, but it was not natural to me at all. If you go back and look at some of the tapes, I believe it took me at least 3 years to even feel like I have even had a chance to being comfortable. I remember some games after the game, I didn't even know the score of the game. I really didn't. I was just really caught up in trying to, you know, and part of that is, you know, when you're working with Bob, he has such a high standard. You come in, I'm awful, I'm embarrassed. I know I'm not doing a good job. It was a struggle that way. And, you know, I credit Bob a lot with just how much rope he gave me, because at the beginning he had to do a lot of the lifting, and he did. But after about the third year, he started to let me, you know, just by backing off a little himself, just to let me get in a little bit more and get, and then as the comfort came, and then the back and forth with Bob. And then, you know, now I can remember, guys, I can remember a game in Carolina. I can't tell you the score. I think it was back in the old building, back in, man, when they used to play before they went to Raleigh. And I just, after the game, I think the Kings won in overtime. I just looked at Bob and said, Bob, that call was incredible. You know, so now I was starting to listen and understand and hopefully participate in the broadcast.
So, Jim, you could say the game kind of slowed down for you.
it did, because I really struggled with technical, someone talking in my ear, and you're hearing and you're trying to call, just a whole bunch of stuff. The replays, how fast they came, how didn't, you know, now I think, you know, bing, piece of cake. But back then it wasn't, and, you know, just again with Bob, and everyone should do their own, everyone should be their own personality, their own broadcaster. You know, Mike Lang in Pittsburgh just retired the other day, or just announced he won't be, you know, he was the most flamboyant and all the sayings and all that. What I liked about Bob was Bob just called the game. He didn't have any catchphrases. And again, with Mike Lang, it fit Mike, right? That's him. With Bob, it didn't. Bob just called the game. I think Bob's ability to capture the moment with the proper amount of energy was his biggest strength. You know, if you heard his voice and inflection grow and build, something was happening. And if not, he had a cadence that was perfect to continue an energy, but you knew not, you know, it's just a normal flow of the game. But when it picked up, he was able to capture that without overdoing it. He never overdid it. He didn't yell. He didn't scream. He just called the game. And that was a pleasure, just a pleasure to sit beside him for so many years.
Yeah, that's so true. Because, I mean, if you have somebody that's, you know, constantly, you know, raising their voice over every little play, after a while, you just start to, oh, okay, nothing's really going on here. Like, I mean, Mystery Alaska is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I just wanted to know how that was working with Mike Myers and that scene you did in the studio in between periods for the mystery.
Mystery Alaska was such a, it's a great experience. I tell you, I got it. It's just, crazy. I didn't realize it was a motion picture. You know, they sent me the script and all, you know. And then I went in for, like, you had to get your wardrobe, and they had to, you know, they had a tailor there, and they're, you know, sizing you up and all this stuff. And I go, okay, you know, now I started to kind of see what was going on here. Like, okay, this is a pretty big deal. And the scenes with Mike Myers, I had lines, and he basically improvised everything he said. He didn't have to worry about, you know, lines. So I had to set him up a couple times. And I still remember the first scene, like, I asked my question, he went off on his thing, and then at the end, he stopped, and I kind of, like, and I just looked to the camera and went, oh, I'm supposed to say something here, aren't I? Like, you know, just not used to the acting and reading lines and things of that sort. And then there were a couple times I broke up laughing, you know, so, you know, you can't do that because the audio's got it in the background, so you have to do it again. And he would do it differently the next time. It was just crazy. It was really, you know, I knew that he knew hockey, so that was a good thing. I think what they were going for was some type of a Don Cherry spoof type of thing where you have a big, boisterous character and personality. But it was, you know, man, I'll tell you what. Movie sets, the one thing they do well, they eat well. The catering on those sets, I mean, for 24 hours or whatever you can walk into the commissary anytime and you can have whatever you want at any hour of the day. They've got chefs ready. Oh, man, great experience, fun. And I know it's I really liked the movie. I did. I thought it was great. I thought the locker room scenes, which were a little raunchy, but I thought they were exactly the way it is inside a hockey locker room. And that's the one thing when I, you know, finished. And, you know, the stories are heartwarming, you know, and the great ending, all that stuff. But I thought the locker room scenes were done excellent.
That's awesome. Yeah. Jim, I appreciate you coming on. I mean, just to kind of say, I've been listening to you for you and Bob for so long, and I'm sure we all have. So it's been a real treat. And I will say, like, the one of the best things that I think about you as an announcer is your ability to just tell it how it is and kind of leave that homerism out the door. But I guess if we can just dive into Kings hockey now, like we all know, the last couple of years been kind of a rebuild going on with the Kings. Last season they kind of turn it around a little bit, I guess you can say. Kind of just want to get your thoughts on how the Kings were just last season in that short, abbreviated season, I guess.
I think this year is the first year of going up again. I agree what you said there as far as getting to a kind of a stability issue. Mm-hmm. I think the teardown ended last year, and maybe it was the leveling of the ground and the foundation, and now I hope that the upswing comes. I think that, you know, their goal was to play important games, and we felt with the division's alignments due to COVID that, you know, maybe they had a chance. I think with about 15 games remaining, they still had a chance, but then bang, they fell flat. They fell flat at the most important. Now, the schedule had a little bit to do with it. What, seven of the last eight games were Colorado and Vegas.
Jim, I was going to say the Avalanche, right?
Yeah. There you go. They got caught under that one. But, you know, I think it's on the upswing. I think my perception of timeline is probably a little bit longer than what people who follow the team would want it to be. I think it's going to take a little bit longer when you go through a complete rebuild. But I'm also a big believer in tear it down and rebuild. Don't go halfway. I'm not a big believer in trying to win and get better and at the I don't think that works. It's my opinion. I know you guys. I follow you guys too with all the numbers and the stats and the analytics and so. But I don't know if I have anything to back that up. But I'm a believer in that you have a window, and you got to go for it when you have the window. I think the Kings found themselves in that window after in the 15-16 where they went for it a couple more times, probably weren't ready. You know. Mm-hmm. Maybe should have started, but that's hindsight. I had no problem with them going after Lucic. I had no problem with it going after Kovalchuk. They felt they had that chance. When you feel you have the chance, go for it. Mm-hmm. Now they went through 2 or 3 or 4 years of boom, down, right? Restock the shelves, get the prospects, keep the picks, keep the assets. Now, though, Arvidsson comes in, Edler comes in, Deneau signed as a free agent. Now you have a chance to go on the way out. But I still think it's going to be a while.
Yeah, there's almost like this foundation, I guess, being built kind of around the core that's still there with, you have Kopitar still there, Brown's still around for probably a little bit more longer than Doughty, of course. But like you said, the last season kind of, I guess the ending of the rebuild was probably when Carter was traded. And now you have the point where now there's players coming in as opposed to being shipped out. So now just kind of want to get your thoughts on what to expect, I guess, from a King. What should Kings fans expect for this coming season with all these new players coming in?
Well, I hope we continue to see a sprinkling in of the younger kids, you know, as we go along. Now, I would assume Byfield's going to make the team out of camp. But will we see Turcotte? Will we see... Just the whole bunch, there's a whole, you know, the names are, it's a long list of names of what can and cannot be as far as young kids. You know, Kaliev, who I consider, you know, again, what do I know, but probably more of a one-dimensional player. I know he's shown things at Ontario and, you know, no different guy. I hear the stories of, you know, he made this great pass. Artie, shoot the puck. Shoot it.
That one dimension is something the Kings need right now.
Yep. And you know, Brett Hull, when he played, you know, they said he was a great passer, better passer than he got credit for. Great. We didn't give him enough credit passing. Shoot the puck. So, you know, Kaliev, you know, Turcotte's more of a well-rounded guy. You know, will we see, how much will we see of those guys? Kupari, who, you know, he looks good. He's got a package there as far as, you know, the skill, the size, a little bit of strength.
Speed.
So yeah, I hope that continues. You know, with the three veterans that were added, you know, the easiest way for me, guys, is this. I assume the next time the Kings are going for the Stanley Cup, Andre Kopitar won't be their number one center.
Agreed. Yeah.
You know, there's going to be a turnover. I think Andre can play forever because of his understanding of the game, his size, and he's an elite conditioned, fit athlete. Elite. So I think there's just going to be a turnover that someone's going to have to take over. Philippe Deneau, I just saw an article. I've heard him talk. You know, I hope he can become a more offensive. I just want Philippe Deneau from Montreal. That's what mm-hmm. I want. Mm-hmm. I want it to be. Now, again, can he get more opportunity with the Kings? Yes. Maybe his fitting into the piece of puzzle will be a little bit different, and maybe he will be put into more offensive situations. But what I hope he's here for is to take the load off of Kopitar, so Kopitar doesn't have to take every defensive zone face-off. And then sometimes you get caught out there for 30 seconds. Then you have to change. And by the end of the night, Andre's shifts are, you know, instead of going 40% offensive, you know, and 60% kind of treading water, he's going 75% starting in his own zone, playing solid defense, and then energy level at the end of the game, you need more for offense. So Hopefully Deneau can help there. I hope he can bring offense too, but I again, I'm just looking for him to bring, win faceoffs, be a smart penalty killer, and be a, you know, 18, 19, 20, some nights 22 minutes, whatever it takes. I assume it'll be used on the power play to win faceoffs exclusively, then stay out there. So I really like Edler. That's my opinion. I know he's not Edler of 10 years ago, but I remember going into Vancouver, and he was the type of player that everyone was on. The fans were on him. This was, oh, he can't. And you know what? Coach, it's so funny to me. They love the coach, the fans and the media. But the coach is making all these great decisions. Then they hit Edler, and then he ends up with the most ice time. Well, who's putting him on the ice?
The coach.
The coach you hate. The coach you love is the guy putting him on. So I think he, you know, he's a little bit more physical than he was back then. He could run a power play. He could, but so I just like, just from what I've known about him, is that he is a leader. He's a solid person. And I think with the Kings youngsters on D, right, you're going to need that type of guy just to look at and get the job done that way. Haven't touched on Arvidsson, the new, you know, but, you know, hopefully he brings that quickness, that jump in his step. And from what we've seen in the past, he's not looking to pass. He's looking to shoot. And if he ends up with Kopitar, who knows? But if he ends up there, maybe it'll be the first time Andre's had a pure shooter on his line in a long time.
Yeah, I love what you said about Philip Deneau. I mean, I don't think Rob Blake is bringing him in to elevate his game offensively. He's bringing him in to be the player he was in Montreal. I mean, if I'm looking at the stats right now, Andre Kopitar had more starts in the defensive zone than any other player on the team. I mean, if you're able to limit that and give him more starts in the offensive zone, I mean, that's just only going to increase his stats in that point. But I mean, you touched on another player that my friend Scott and I have gone back and forth, Quentin Byfield. There seems to be this rumor running out there that players like Quentin and Quentin's situation that had 20 or more games played in the AHL last year can probably go back to the AHL. So he could possibly play a full season with the Ontario Reign coming. I personally think, I know this is not what a lot of Kings fans want to hear, but I personally think another year with the Reign would be good for him. But there's been talk, and Scott wants to see a player like Quentin be playing in the NHL and start with the Kings going this season. So kind of just want to get your thoughts on that.
My first thought is just, can he skate at an NHL level? That's my first thing. He's a big boy, right? He's a big kid. I mean, can he? Yes, I think he skate. I think his footwork, his foot speed, his turnover rate, his agility back and forth, I think he can do that. So that's where I'd like to see him up there. I'd like to see him play up there. I'd like to see him put in situations where maybe he can. Now, are you, again, we'll get to that. The best way is to bluntly say it. Are you trying to make the playoffs or are you trying to win a Stanley Cup?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think there are sometimes you make moves that get you closer to the playoffs, but farther from the Stanley Cup. And with Byfield, I actually want to see him play. I think he can improve. I think he can learn. I think he can get enough ice time. I think he can to warrant him staying at the NHL level. But that's something to be decided. I think that when I look at his skill set, you can understand why he was picked second overall. Because to have a player that size and be able to have the foot speed that he does, to me, is a rare combination. And to go what you were just talking about, and against my argument, I think the Kings are picking him at second overall based on where he's going to be when he's 23, not one when he's 20 or 21. Right. So they want to give him some time. So more time in the minors wouldn't hurt him. I just see him as, you know, maybe it's more of a hope, but I just hope he comes and elevates to a point where you go, ooh, 15 minutes a night. If he can get him 15 solid minutes a night, he should stay with the Kings. And I hope he can prove he'll have to earn it. It's not going to be given to him. They have that option to go back to the AHL. But if he can earn that 15 minutes a night, I'd like to see him with the Kings.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Jim. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, if he proves it in camp, like you just said, and say they put him in a third line center, obviously you're going to have Kopi at 1C, Danault playing 2C. But if he goes in at 3C and he's learned from Kopi and Danault and get time at the NHL level to get seasoned, I think it's only going to be a good thing for him.
Yeah, there's still a lot to prove there. And I think I don't want to rush anyone. I think, you know, what the Kings have done over the last 3 or 4 years is not rush. They've done what I believe is the way to do it, which is tear it down and start all over and go. And, you know, Tampa Bay just won the Stanley Cup, right? Twice. First overall, Stamkos. Hedman, where was he? Second?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's how you get better. That's how you get better. We were fortunate to get Kopi at 11. We're fortunate to get Quickie where we did. But Drew Doughty is the piece. Second overall, he comes in. Now you have Byfield, a generation later, second overall. That's how you get better. You get high picks. You maintain a belief system and a culture. You do have to build that. And you have to maintain it. You can't slip on that. And I think the Kings have done that. I'm hoping that he comes in and just, he does not give the coaching staff or Rob Blake any other choice but to play him 15 minutes a night.
Jim, I just want to ask you one more thing. It kind of segued into it just before we let you go. And just want to just quickly thank you for joining us tonight. Kings went into the 2021 NHL draft with 9 picks. They left with 4 in what was called a quality over quantity draft. Just wanted to get your general thoughts on, the Kings going with Brent Clark and then following with the 3 picks after him.
Well, I think Clark is an easy one just by looking at the footage that I've seen, by listening to him talk and then listen to other people talk, about him and the way he approaches the game, the way he sees the game, the way he reads the game, and the way he can attack as a defenseman. I mean, he's all over. He's nonstop. He's not quite Cale Makar, but no one is. But he has that same type of maneuvering ability, I think, in the offensive zone. I don't think anyone has the footwork of Makar, who I believe might be the best player in the league, even better than Connor McDavid. But he's got a sense there, right? He's got an urgency. It looks like he wants to win the game. And I really like that about him. Another gentleman who in our business, Craig Button, who does an outstanding job, I think. I love listening to Craig every time he talks, and he had a lot of good things to say about Clark. I like what they did. They packaged a few things to move up. Hopefully, in a draft like this, where maybe more diamonds in the rough will be found because of, just the inability to really get the book you would want to get on kids because of the lack of games and maybe not playing in the league they should have been playing in, all those types of things that went on during COVID. But I like the Kings pinpointing a certain area. Okay, move up once, move up twice, get the guy you need. But again, you guys know, if you want numbers, you want analytics, you know that a second overall pick has a 98% chance of playing 200 games in NHL. A third overall pick probably has a 14% chance of playing 200. So, a third round pick, I should say. So, it goes dramatically down as far as odds and numbers and things of that sort. But I think the Kings did what they needed to do. They stocked the shelf, and then they used that stock shelf to put things together, which, guys, I think we're going to see more of in the next year or two, where the Kings, all these guys, these young, I hate to say it, but they're assets, and they may not be Kings, but they're going to be used to get or package together and get better, get better players. And that's what I'm seeing right now. That's what I'm hoping for. I think what they did is fine. I have no problem whatsoever with it. Again, it's 8th overall, isn't 2nd overall, but it's still up there. And in a draft like this year, who knows? Who knows what that order would have been? Because, again, not everyone didn't get their normal amount of games played.
Jim, just I got to ask you a kind of a hypothetical. If William Eklund was still on the board when the Kings were picking eighth overall, I know you just talked, you just kind of harped on scoring there. Who would you have taken between Eklund or Clark?
You know what, guys? I'll be completely honest with you. When they come to the NHL, that's when I start analyzing them. I really don't look. I couldn't. That's call it a weakness. I spend my time on the guys in the NHL. I don't do a lot. I listen to Craig Button. That's what I do. And I take his word as gospel. I don't do a lot of research into that type of stuff. I did see Kaliev a little bit because he was at King's Prospect camps and when they come to camps and things of that sort. And I saw a little bit more video on him and then World Championships, all that. That's where I get my scouting done, guys. World Juniors. So I don't get a chance to see a big, you know, handful, you know, 50 games. I get to see 10 games, and that's where I make my assessment. So to talk about this guy versus that guy would be unfair to them because I don't know enough about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Fair enough, because, I mean, that's true, too. I mean, these guys that are doing all these assessments, get these players for 50, 60 games, you know, at a clip, and how do you make that decision? Really. But, you know, Jim, we just want to thank you for coming on and taking the time to talk, because this has been really just a treat for us. And, you know, just please keep doing what you're doing. And, I mean, just keep providing a great analyst for us, because we would miss the heck out of you if you weren't on the air for us.
Absolutely.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me. Like I say, I understand. I know that you guys bring different things, and that's great. Keep bringing it. Because there's, you know, you got to listen to everyone. You don't have to take everything in. You don't have to believe in it, but you have to listen to everyone. And I appreciate what you guys do, because the perspectives you bring are a little bit different from each other. And I think that's what makes your package together, what you guys bring. It's great to listen to. And believe me, I listen and I learn. So I appreciate it.
Appreciate hearing that.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. We appreciate it.
You're not, Jim.
That was Jim Fox, everybody. Wow, that was awesome. That was really, really cool. Just to get those insights from the guy who's in the booth for every game for the Kings. That was
absolutely
awesome.
Yeah.
That was. And just brief sorry to our listeners. We had a little bit of technical difficulties, but hopefully you still enjoyed the interview.
Yeah, I'm still kind of a little awestruck, I guess you can say. I mean, it was really cool to kind of hear his perspectives on almost like how he feels about the draft, his thoughts on Byfield too. I mean, that's another interesting perspective. I know we've kind of talked about it quite a bit, but yeah, that was really cool to hear. And I love hearing all his stories about his playing days and working with Bob Miller, of course.
I know he'd be an awesome guy to get a beer with.
Or wine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or wine, or, you know, 10 beers.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So should we talk about your little article that we had the other day? I think that was the next
one. Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
So, you had an article come out just, I believe it was last week, about players who are potentially on the bubble coming into this upcoming season. I don't know if you want to run down the players and we can kind of analyze the list ourselves.
So, I mean, I put out an article. Actually, I think it was – what's today? Wednesday? Monday. I put it out on Monday. It was just kind of, it was an opinion piece. You know, I did forwards that are entering a make or break season. I chose Adrian Kempe being one of them. He's entering a contract year, very team friendly, $2 million. We all know he's been inconsistent throughout his career. Yeah. He had prorated his best career to date in the shortened season last year. I think he was on pace for 21 goals, 22 assists. I also have Elias Anderson, who was kind of up and down between the Reign and the Kings last year. And I just don't know. I don't know where he fits in long-term, guys. I don't know. I mean, he has to show something fairly early on this year. And I mean, that could be said for a lot of players, obviously. I'm sure you guys will have a few that I will also agree with. But the other guy is fairly obvious, is Austin Wagner. He's an extra forward on my roster projection right now. I was able to dig up this stat on him, and I'm sorry in advance for it, but his 0.23 points per game is the lowest on the Kings roster for players who have played in at least 30 games since the 18-19 season.
Oof.
He's got a ton of speed. He just cannot finish.
Yeah.
We've all seen the breakaways, but unfortunately he just has trouble finding the back of the net.
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. But just the thing with Austin Wagner is, if you don't expect 10 to 15 goals a season out of him, he's not a bad player. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it. He averages 2.5 hits a game, right? He's got speed to burn to help out with that forecheck. I think if you can just accept the fact that he is just going to be a fourth-line player and he's going to be great for, you know, the forecheck and to create commotion out there, then that's what you need. I mean, and again, I know he came in with high expectations because who wouldn't? The guy gets how many breakaways a game, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So, of course, you want to see him score. But if you kind of step back for a second, and I'm not saying that, you know, the Kings are going to hang on to him for that reason. I'm just saying that, you know, if you kind of accept who he is, then it kind of makes it, you know, seem a little bit better anyway, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's weird because I thought Austin Wagner actually had some good couple of games in this past season. And I think if he's able to hone in on his defensive abilities, then he can be a sustainable third, fourth line winger. Because like we've all seen, his speed is really noticeable on the ice. Mm-hmm. And he's been using his body a lot more. But it was a little bit surprising when the Kings gave him that three-year deal, just because he really hadn't proven himself yet. And so now that he's been playing on this contract and still really hasn't proven himself, I think that's kind of drawn the ire of a lot of Kings fans. But I mean, another player like a player you mentioned, Ryan, is Elias Anderson. I mean, the Kings gave up a second round pick for him, paid a high price just to bring him in. I mean, he was a former 7th overall pick, so he does definitely has some potential, but it's just unfortunately for him, there's more quality coming, and it's just where does he fit in at this moment? There was another player. Did you mention Brendan Lemieux in your article as well?
Not Lemieux, but I mean, Carl Grundstrom is in there too. He's had a long look of, you know, part of two seasons now with the Kings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Grundstrom is definitely going to be one of the players that, I mean, unfortunately, he might not be able to find a spot with this upcoming roster.
Blake Lizotte's probably another one.
Yeah, Lizotte. And I mean, I'm Brendan Lemieux is a player I'll talk about, and this is weird because if you look at the Kings lineup right now, there is nothing that compares to what Brendan Lemieux can bring on the ice. So there's really not that with Curtis McDermott gone. There's no one really that has that kind of edge, I guess, to his game, and that's really what Brendan Lemieux was brought in for. So I mean, he was really traded for a 4th round pick. And kind of just brought in and kind of just thrown into the fire without a lot of practice to the team. So that'll be another player interesting to see what he brings in the training camp.
Oh, no doubt about it. You know, the thing is, too, that people kind of forget is obviously there's going to be some waivers coming up, right, at the end of camp or whatever.
Yeah,
and eventually what that's going to do is it's going to open up more cap space.
Yeah.
Because there's a little silver lining on that.
The last guy they have to sign is Jacob Molvere, which I thought that would be announced last week. I don't know if he's considering options back to the SHL.
Yeah, I thought that might be an option too for him. I mean, I think sorry to cut you off.
No, you're good.
Yeah, the player that comes to mind when I think about Molvere is Slava Voynov. When he wasn't really given the opportunity in the NHL, and then his agent pretty much told the Kings, hey, if you don't sign him, then he's going to leave and go back to Europe. And that's kind of where it seems like Molvere is at this point, because where are you going to play him? He's probably not going to get a look in the NHL. I mean, who knows? Austin Strand got some playing time. We never really saw that coming. So, who knows?
I thought Sean Durzi would get some playing time.
Yeah, and that's another player.
He still might, but you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I thought he would have been signed by now. So I don't know what's going on there. And it won't be much in terms of cap space, but just another thing to consider, I guess.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's going to be musical chairs. I mean, it's going to be one gigantic game of musical chairs on ice, which actually, you know, I'd actually kind of like to see the visual on that. Could you imagine that? That'd be awesome.
That is probably happened in between periods in some arena.
Yeah, right. Oh yeah, definitely. Imagine making a mad dash for one chair and you slide like 20 feet across the ice.
And then you start playing Rich's ACL golf. Yeah.
Well, that was a bad idea, guys.
Yeah, this training camp will be it's wild because it's the top. I mean, I think we can all agree that the top six is pretty much solidified. I mean, I guess you could probably – there's been some talk about interchanging, maybe bringing Dustin Brown down a little bit to the third line, sliding Arvidsson up, and then sliding up another right wing. But, I mean, it seems like that top six is pretty much solidified. So the battle for the bottom six lines is going to be – it's just going to be wild. And, I mean, I've hyped up Vladimir Kachev quite a bit. I feel like that's a player that should get a long look in the NHL, and I think he will. But yeah, I mean, those names you mentioned, that's a crowd right now.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
Just real quick, Scott, I mean, I posted an article late today, but one of the betting sites released the odds for the Calder Trophy, and Quinton Byfield had a plus 1200 money line. So, I mean, if anyone wants to throw down $100, I get a little lucky.
You know what?
That probably tickled Scott a little bit.
You know, I was like, I felt so awesome after I saw that. I was like, yes! For once, there's somebody else that doesn't think he's going to start the AHL.
I said to you guys, though, he was on it last year, obviously much lower than 1,200. But Gabe Vilardi was another one that was on last year's list. But, you know, I'm looking at this year's list, and obviously the favorite is Cole Caulfield. Given what he did in the limited sample size. But they got Trevor Zegras and Jamie Drysdale, both at plus 2,000, which I thought was a little bit interesting.
Yeah,
it is. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't really follow the Ducks, of course, so I don't know if the plan is to start Zegras and Drysdale in the NHL this year, or are they going to be playing in the AHL as well?
I think they're just going to throw them into the fire. I think so too.
I mean, they both burned the first year off their ELCs last year, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. I know Zegras for sure. I think
Drysdale did as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was weird too. I mean, it's, you know, if you look at the Kings' way of thinking, they obviously weren't interested in burning first year of ELCs, but both of those guys didn't play a full season with the Ducks, but yet they still burned their first year of their contract.
And Zegras converted to a center.
Yeah.
That's right, you did.
Drysdale played in 24 games last year, the Ducks.
Did he play in that many? Really?
He did, yeah. I remember he was called up early, but they were flip-flopping so much, I couldn't remember.
He had really poor defensive metrics too, but I mean, he's going to be a great player in the NHL. I mean,
right,
absolutely.
He seems really similar to what Brant Clark's going to bring. Just that offensive type game and that almost Cale Makar-esque, but yeah, I loved hearing what Jim Fox mentioned about, like, I mean, we got ran down that list with Quinton Byfield. I loved hearing his thoughts on it about, and that's why I said that I wouldn't mind seeing Quinton Byfield play, and I think it would be good. But if it comes to the point where he's pretty much forcing his hand into the roster, I mean, as Kings fans, I mean, that's music to our ears. That's what we want to hear. But if it doesn't come to that, that's where I say, okay, well, let's hold him back and put him back on the Ontario. But yeah, I mean, that's another battle we'll have to watch in training camp.
Oh yeah, exactly. And I felt bad asking about the Eklund Clark thing. You know, I don't like, just kind of a fun question, but a question I was withholding was, you know, where, if Byfield makes the roster, which center doesn't? You know,
Or
which center moves to the wing and which wing doesn't make the roster.
Well, that's the whole thing, you know, and that's why I've been saying too, you know, they've really got to decide who they want to bring up this year, because they got to bring somebody up.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you can't just stick everybody in Ontario. You can't do it, because they all need quality minutes. And I've said this before and I'll say it again. The team really needs to decide this season who is going to be a center and who is going to be a winger. And the best place to do that is Ontario. And again, if Quinton Byfield has a great camp, I'm not saying just hand it to him. I'm not saying that at all. But you know darn well that Quinton Byfield is not going to move to the wing. So if he can prove it in camp, put him in a third-line center, and let Turcotte, Kupari, Madden, Akil Thomas, let those guys battle it out in Ontario to see who's going to play center and who's going to play wing.
Yeah, and to your point, Scott, I mean, that's why the Ducks sent Zegras back down, was to get him work at center. I mean, I don't mean to make this a Ducks podcast. Next week, though, we're going to have Ryan Getzlaff on. No,
can't wait.
So that, no. And that's kind of what we've heard from Rob Blake talk. I mean, in the last time we heard from him, he, when asked about potentially moving Vilardi to the wing, he said, I mean, I don't want to quote him directly, but I believe he mentioned, I've always seen a center move to the wing. I've never seen a wing move to the center. So he made it seem like it was an open possibility for that to happen.
Well, Vilardi played a few games down there when he was quote unquote in the doghouse.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if any player is going to move to the wing, it sounds like it's probably going to be Vilardi. And that would just open up a spot for Quinton.
It's that trickle effect, though. I mean, because then, who stays on the NHL roster? You know, does Elias Anderson have to clear waivers and go back down to Ontario? Athanasiu is not going anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's why, honestly, I think you're going to see some trades made even more before the season starts.
Possibly.
I really think that because
there's so.
Again, you just have too many skaters and not enough chairs. You really
even
don't.
Just to get in some kind of capital. I mean, even if it's like trading Austin Wagner for fourth or fifth round pick.
Right.
Something of that nature.
If McDermott can get a fourth round pick, Austin Wagner's like eighth overall.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Elf in the room. Glad someone said it.
Yeah. But man, I can't wait until training camp gets going and when it gets started. And that's just going to be. And Russ, I am so jealous of you that you get to go watch that.
Yeah, I'll be in training camp, and I'll also be in Arizona for the development camp for any fans that are going to be out there. I'll be watching the games and hopefully take some good pictures. And if I have the time, I'll probably be live tweeting the games for anyone else who's not going to be there. So looking forward to that. I went to the one that was in Irvine a couple years ago, and that was – I remember watching – actually, it was funny because I remember watching Toby Bjornfoot play the year he was drafted, and I thought to myself, he and Aiden Dudas were the best players on the ice, and eventually Toby got the short look in the NHL, and I wasn't actually surprised because he was really that good at that tournament. So I'm looking forward to see what tournaments can shine in this upcoming prospect tournament as well.
You know, I want to ask you guys what. Oh, I'm sorry, Rob. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I was just going to. It's going to be a different topic, but go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you guys. Speaking of all that, so the Kings did re-sign Cal Clegg. Where does he fit in on all of this now?
It kind of fits with my question too. I was going to say, how do you guys picture the left side of the defense this year?
Yeah,
I see great minds think alike.
I don't know if mine's that great. So you're carrying you're carrying this.
The left side. It's from if you want to look at it, they brought in Edler. I mean, Olimata's still there. I mean, so right now you're looking at Toby. You have Mikey Anderson. You have Alex Edler and you have Olimata. And then, so yeah, like you mentioned, where does that leave Cale Clegg? I mean, personally, I could see a situation where they do send Toby Bjornfoot down to Ontario Reign. I mean, unfortunately, it's just like he's a player that is, he doesn't need waivers. So, I mean, just from a situational standpoint, it'd just be easier for the Kings to do that. And I mean, Olimata, he's still a valuable defenseman. He's not a top pair defenseman like the Kings wanted to look at last season, but he can still play second pair or third pair of minutes. And now with Edler in there, leave that Mikey Anderson and Drew Doughty together. You have Edler with Roy, and then you have Mata with Walker. And they had some good time together last season. So that's a pair I could see happening.
So you're saying, where does that leave Clegg then? Have him be the seventh defenseman?
Seventh defenseman, interchanging with Mata here and there. I mean, and the thing we're not thinking about either is, I mean, let's say there's injuries in training camp too. We're not even thinking about that. I mean, that happens every season where players don't. I mean, how often do teams go into the beginning of the season with their full roster intact? I mean, it doesn't really happen. I mean, last season Mark Alt started the opening night game. So, I mean, who knows what's going to happen this coming season?
But you know, I totally get what you're saying about Bjornfoot being waiver exempt, and that on the surface that makes a lot of sense. But here's the thing, like. you could probably safely send Mata down to Ontario. If somebody claims him, okay, they're off underneath the salary. If not, they get to bury $1 million in the AHL and have a very valuable call-up in the event they should need one. Because to be perfectly honest with you, I think Cale Clegg needs to get some playing time. They need to see what he's got, and they can't send him back to Ontario because he's going to get claimed. There's no doubt about it.
But so, he had that weird like 2 week period where he was just sitting on the taxi squad and not getting.
I know.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
I don't understand it either. But I mean, but there and again, guys, we don't see him every day at practice.
No, right? I know.
So we don't see all that. So I mean, I'm not blaming Coach McClellan or anything
like that. No, definitely not. But it's like Jared Anderson Dolan to start the year. You know, he starts mostly the entire first part of the year on the taxi squad. He gets inserted when Lizotte goes on the COVID list, and he kind of just claimed that spot for himself for the rest of the year.
Right. But I mean, I would actually rather see Clegg end up with, say, like Matt Roy, who can cover him defensively. Because let's face it, the calling card for Cale Clegg is offense.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, Matt
John Walker's more of an offensive guy. Put him with Edler. See what happens.
Yeah, Matt Roy and Cale Clegg had the best defensive metrics on any defensive pair last season. It was only a small sample size, but when they played together, it looked really good. And I don't envision, when I say having Clegg as a seventh defenseman, I say whenever there's back to backs or there's a long road trip or something like that. I mean, have Mata play some games, have Cale Clegg play some games, because I mean, we talk about Cale Clegg that he's a great player, but he still hasn't played a full season in the NHL. I mean, he's still a young player that's developing into the NHL. So, I mean, I think there's an opportunity here for the Kings to kind of ease him into the lineup a little bit more now. But, I mean, like you mentioned, they can't just send him through waivers because that's a player. I mean, I think about like a Thomas Hickey, that situation where the Kings lost Hickey on waivers also.
Right. And, you know, here's the thing. Like, I would actually, and I know this is not going to sit well with some, but I would actually rather see him rotate Edler in and out. Reason being, if they're going to be a playoff team, rest him a little bit through the season. You don't need to play him 82 games.
Scott, you brought up, you know, great minds alike. You're carrying the load again. I don't know if you guys listened to all the Kings Men podcast with Thomas Dramus of The Athletic. But he said he kind of gave an insight to what the Kings were getting at Alex Edler. And he said, no longer has a foot speed. He's really strong out of the gate for the first 20 games or so. He said he would recommend, you know, on the second leg of back-to-backs resting him. To your point, that's where Cale Clegg slides in.
Right. Well, you know, and that's the thing, too. And I'll fill you on a little secret, okay? And don't think I'm a traitor for saying this. But I've actually watched a lot of Vancouver Canucks hockey on TV.
I know you said this last week.
I did? I don't remember. Yeah. I'm getting old. Leave me alone, Ryan. But the fact is, I mean, don't get me wrong. Alex Edler still brings a lot to the table. But, I mean, he is 35 years old as well. So you really, you got to be able to rest him throughout the season and load manage it more than anything else. So, Russ brings up a great point. What do you do with Bjorn for him?
I don't know. I don't know. To what he said, it'd be interesting to watch how the training camp unfolds. Does Mata get put on waivers eventually? You know, I think most teams recognize that they don't need to give up a pick to get him.
Right. But again, it's and nothing against Ali Mata, but it's almost a win-win for the Kings, right? If somebody takes him, they get rid of the salary.
Right. I mean, they don't need it for this year. I think I looked it up and with all the salary coming off the books after this coming season, it's like $17 million, close to that. But they still have to re-sign Cal Peterson, obviously. So he'll get a sizable contract. But, you know, the Kings should probably have, 12 to 13 or 14 left to work with?
Well, I'd actually saw a suggestion online about buying out Ali Mata, which to me, why would you buy him out? Why drag that salary out for next year?
No, I wouldn't. I think I looked at that. It's not a significant amount into next year, but it's just like you don't want to keep stringing him along. Just like either cut ties with him this year or find a role that he can serve.
Yeah, absolutely.
They gave up nothing to give him. They gave up Brad Morrison to get him, I think he was part of the Vinny Hinostroza trade from the Blackhawks to the Panthers, and I think he's in the ECHL now.
Yeah, I think so too. But hey, but at least there was an actual trade. Not like some of these trades we saw a few weeks ago, huh? We're here. You just take all these assets and we don't want nothing back. But thanks anyway.
Yeah, yeah, those graphics were interesting. Too long of text to fit on one page on one side. And then on the other side it said like salary cap.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. But no, like I said, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. And I tell you, this, now we're actually legit into the dog days. I mean, it got delayed on us because, you know, the draft and expansion draft and, you know, free agent frenzy was all a little bit later than usual. But now we're in the dog days, but it's only going to last a few more weeks, fellas. We'll be all right.
I know. We just got to get through this month. Yeah. I mean, usually the Stanley Cup's over in mid-June. We're granted basically an extra month of that. But yeah, it'll be here before we know it.
Yeah, definitely. So when next we meet, hopefully we'll have some news to talk about. And if not, I'm sure we can just make up something to talk about because we always do. So
absolutely, guys.
That's our best effort.
So I think with that, we're going to wrap our show up. We want to thank once again Jim Fox for coming on. That was a real treat to have him on with his insights.
Yes, that was awesome.
And, you know, absolute pleasure to have him on. Yeah.
Absolutely. So for Russell Morgan, for Ryan Sykes, for Ryan Cowley, I'm Scott Kimball. Thanks for listening, and go Kings, go!